Fitness Movement is brought to you by Zor Fitness. We offer coaching and individualized program design, as well as educational content for coaches and athletes. It's all at one place, zorfitness.com. Today, we're going to be talking about cueing athletes to better performance, basically using words and language and figuring out how we can communicate with our athletes in short, meaningful ways that elicits a better performance for them. So, you know, a cue might be as simple as something like if you're doing an Olympic lift, like jump. Like short usually has some sort of connection for the athlete that they understand what you're actually saying, and it can be like actionable, right? Not saying that's a good cue, that's an example of a cue. So, Dan and Chris, in your mind, like what other things make an effective cue?
I mean, for me, like cues, especially in the environment that I work in, where I'm working with a lot of people at once, so I'm trying to keep an eye on a bunch of people, and they're all doing snatches, cleans, all this stuff, right? Like technical movements. So I try to make cues to be like effective by being like short and to the point, something that they can grasp easily. They don't have to overthink it. And if they're, let's say, in the middle of a set and I give a cue, they're able to process it because they're already thinking about the lift, right? So if they're like squatting and they're thinking about all these different things, I don't want to just throw more in there. So one of my main things for like an effective cue is just to keep it short and understandable to the population.
Yeah, it has to be super direct. I think off call, Ben did a really good job kind of outlining it and how like cues versus feedback is kind of how you prepped it. But a cue is short, direct, to the point. The athlete understands exactly what you mean. You know, oftentimes as coaches, we've demonstrated what we mean by that cue, right? So when I say this, I mean this, so that the athlete's able to visualize it and then try to internalize it versus feedback that's much longer and thought provoking. So yeah, I think the biggest thing is it has to basically point back to a line of action you want to see in a short, condensed and quick way, so the athlete can in points of performance get right into it, ideally.
Yeah. No, I think you guys hit that right on the head. Like for me, I think cueing changes a little bit if it's a group versus an individual, like Day was saying. If I got a specific person in front of me and I have quite a bit of experience with them, I might give a cue that I would never give in a group. Like, you know, I probably wouldn't just like yell like heels if someone's like a whole group of people's like jerking, for example, out of a rack. That might not be helpful, or people might not even know what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I got heels. What are you saying, coach? Whereas like if I've worked with an individual and I've said like, you always get toesy when you dip for your split jerks, like think about keeping your weight back a little bit more, like keep it in your heels. And I say, and then like as I'm going through and coaching them reps, I'm saying heels to them, that should remind them, and I can come back to it a month later and they'll probably remember that, oh yeah, when coach says heels, he wants me to stay in my heels. Whereas like if you're of a group, usually like I kind of use like the shotgun approach, I don't know what you call it, where basically like if you got one person in front of you and they're doing something that's a little bit wrong, I might yell out a cue that would be helpful for the entire group. For example, like I work with like a lot of younger athletes, and a lot of them got like the knees caving in when they go to squat, and it's like, you know, they just don't have like a lot of leg strength and haven't developed a lot of hip stability. So for a lot of those younger kids, it's like, hey, knees out while we're squatting, take your time on the way down, you know. And again, that could maybe be a cue, but if I say knees out, they all know what I mean.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Usually like working with specific groups, if they have like similar backgrounds or if they're from the same sport, you tend to see the same type of like issues throughout their movements. So like you may work with a sport that's not used to bracing or anything like that, so they have like hyperextended backs and movements they shouldn't or anything like that. So like you kind of go through that with them, and when you demonstrate the movement, like, oh, hey, I want you to brace as you're going down, you know, make sure you're filling up the belt in your belly and stuff like that, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then as you're going through the movement, you're just yelling out like a word or two, and they understand what you meant because you explained it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, yeah, in something like a class environment, it's like, ideally you give something that's has very little downside to it. Like, for example, if I yell out in class, like, people are snatching us, like, we're overhead squatting, I'm like, fight those elbows straight. Like, no one's going to be hurt by the fact of them, even if they have straight elbows, of thinking of keeping their elbows straighter, right? Where if, like, it's possible that if I'm like, go on your heels, and if someone's already on their heels, they're like rocking back even further now, and it like is not the right thing for them. So like, ideally it would be something where everybody could benefit if you're in a group environment. And then ideally, if you're working with one person, it's specific to them and like the common movement faults that they have and that you've identified, and that there's also some a little bit of history to it, like through talking and feedback and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's where like the hallmark, the knees out cue when it comes to squatting, right? I feel like everyone's used that one. That's where like I feel like a lot of coaches, man, they can just miss the boat sometimes, where it's like, I feel like we've all been pre-programmed with a preset of like a chunk of cues that like, hey, this movement, you cue it this way, right? And you have to start there, right? Like I have, as a coach, you got to start with knees out, chest up on a squat. Like yeah, that's the place to start, because that's where most athletes want to be and where most people tend to fail in the movement. But I feel like where most coaches come up short is that's where it stops.
The person's been squatting for 10 years and yell chest up at them. It's like, that's going to change absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like I have a personal training client that like, she's got really long femurs. And so like, she has to squat. Like it looks like her chest is caving, but it's really not. It's just like how she has to squat. And like, she's able to press back up through the bar totally fine. Her heels are in the floor. And it's like, this is good. But if you look at a new coach, it's like, well, her chest isn't up. It's like, well, yeah, not totally. But like the way you want her to squat is actually physically impossible for her to accomplish. And so that's, or even like the person who does, and this is the trick with cueing, right? The person who does need their knees out and does need their chest up, but just yelling knees out and chest up doesn't get them to get their knees out and chest up.
Flat back and nothing changes in their deadlift. They're still
right.
Around.
It's like you have to, it's like, okay, just yelling the same cue is not going to get them to do it, right? This isn't working. So find a different way to cue it, or a different way to say it, or a different, right? They use tactile cues, a different way to touch the person to get them to go where you need them to go. And I think that's super important.
Yeah. It's I feel like cues are only useful if it's something that the athlete can actually change what they're doing based on what you're saying to them. And they just need reminded of it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, it could be like something that actually just needs a training intervention. Like if someone's got weak quads and they're going to squat and their butt's always shooting out the back, they're just getting away from you know, their quads. It's like, maybe they just need to be doing more single leg work and tempo work to keep them in the right position, or just like lighter percentages that allow them to build up that pattern. I mean, for it to not break down as quickly, and just like yelling like at them to like keep their chest up isn't going to work. Right. They might be trying as hard as they physically can, and it's just like, that's not the answer to that problem. And I feel like that's a really easy thing for coaches to fall into. It's like, well, they're still not doing it, right? And I'm still yelling that cue at them. It's like, if it doesn't work, don't repeat it. So in my mind, it's like something that makes a good cue is like the athlete can actually act on it and it's worked for them before. They just need a reminder in the moment that's going to allow them to kind of make corrections.
And that's where like, and Day, I don't know if maybe you could speak to this, being that you coach so many athletes, and you know, I think people would assume that Division I athletes are automatically great movers. And it's like, that's not often the case, right? But I know for me, right, like I don't really coach class now. I take that back. I don't coach class now. But my depth of cues was refined coaching class, because you, God bless them, but you see some people that come to you that it's like, whew, like your brain just doesn't talk to your body much. Like you've got no idea what's going on over there, huh? And so it's like, I don't know, Dave, you can maybe speak to this, but I'm sure your toolbox of cues has been refined over the years, especially coaching a group. And you probably have seen some things that's like, oh dear God, please don't do
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, you get a lot of kids coming from high school who've never had a background, and they've only had background in their sport, right? And not in any type of strength training or resistance training. So you come, there's a lot of newbies. I also work with a lot of like endurance type sports too. So that's another thing too, right? They don't know anything
Not built for
about,
squatting.
yeah, right. Long limbs, all this stuff. So you kind of create your box of cues for each like type of athlete and for each like sport and body type and all that. Really, like, there's only a few sports that like come in and they're like pretty good movers. And like one of them is like, if you watch like the track throwers, right? Like, obviously they are like pros in the gym. They're super strong already. They come in as good movers. Meanwhile, other sports, not so much. So yeah, it's basically taking them from ground zero and just trying to build from there for the most part. And yeah, it's like there's a certification that we took, that we all took here. And part of the test is like a written test, and then there's a practical part. And the practical part is there's a panel of coaches, strength coaches, and you have to demonstrate the move, three movements, and it's bench, I think squat, and power clean, if I'm not mistaken. And you have to give them cues for each one as if you're teaching it to a group of athletes. And it's funny because like they have like, things to review prior to the practical, and like all the cues are very like just the typical cues that like outdated and all that stuff. So it's kind of funny because like the expectation is that's where you start as a strength coach. Like, you start there, and then from there you build up on that based on what you see in your experience and all that. But yeah, definitely working with groups of people, you start like figuring out what works and what doesn't work and what people respond to pretty well.
Yeah, for you, not to dive into just training Division One athletes, that's not the point of this podcast, but for you, it's like I feel like you can correct me if I'm wrong, but your population is Division One athletes. Like they're athletic individuals. And so it's like they're really good at getting their body to do what needs to be done, even if it looks really bad because they're athletic. And so that's almost like it's almost worse, right? Or not worse, but harder, right? Because if I get Susie, who can't move real well, but she's squatting the training bar, it's like she's probably not going to get hurt, right? Like,
Yeah, I was
but
gonna
if
say
it,
they're also highly motivated to like be at like their peak.
yeah. And so it's like you could get like, I'm not saying you train the football team, but like that's like a prime example. I get a kid who doesn't squat well, but who's like just so freaking strong. And so like they can squat 500 pounds really poorly. It's like you could really easily hurt yourself, you know?
Yeah, you see it mostly with like cleans and snatches and all that. Like, the ugliest cleans and snatches you'll ever see, but somehow it's like a ton of weight. So it's like they can get away with it. It's amazing. It's scary. It's, you get a bunch of emotions all in one.
Days in the corner, like, no, stop, please.
please don't, please don't.
Like cheering and also scared for their life. Oh man. Yeah. So if I take this back to like the individual design side of things, one of the things that to me really stands out is that like cues are usually maybe I wouldn't say only helpful, but they are so much more helpful if there's been a whole conversation around it.
For sure.
Like you're giving the athlete feedback about, okay, like this is a cue that maybe I have like two or three people in my mind of like, 100 that I might give a cue to this like this, but it's like you're squatting. I want you to keep your knees forward. Like I've given that to some people, and like if I have a conversation about it, like, hey, you have long femurs, you tend to have your hips shoot back, and your knees will kind of press back as you come out of the hole in your squat. We're trying to stay in your quads more, so I want you to think about keeping your knees like against a wall as you squat down, and then really continuing to drive them forward as you stand up, and that's going to allow you to stay more upright in your squat. It's like if I've had that conversation, the person understands like what that means for them. then it's like that turns out to be a great cue for like that subset of athletes that I've given that to. But again, if you would just give that to like a group, that would be like a terrible idea to say just squat with your knees forward. They'd be like, okay, and they'd all be on their toes and like in terrible positions. So to me, like that's one of the things that is like a hallmark of what like makes a good cue, is that the athlete has a pretty deep understanding, because you haven't just explained that cue specifically, but you've also like had a whole conversation about like, hey, this is what's going wrong, and like this is like the error in your lift, this is how we should be addressing it, and then like this is the specific language that I'm going to be giving you when you're actually lifting, that's going to like hopefully translate to you remembering that whole conversation that we had, and like in a moment being able to adjust your technique. Chris, you want to go over internal versus external cues real quick?
Yeah, this is something. So I know that like for CrossFit and the functional fitness world, like saying the NSCA is like a curse word, but yeah, I know.
So scandalous.
I know. But prior to doing my CrossFit thing, I was a certified personal trainer. And one of the most impactful articles I read was through the NSCA, and it drew the correlation between internal versus external cues. So like, to give an example, you know, in a squat, right, cueing like trying to push the floor apart with your feet versus squeeze your glutes, right? So external would be pushing the floor apart, right? Because you're focusing on something outside of the body. So external to the muscles in your body versus internal. So squeeze your glutes, right? That's calling you into something inside your body, drawing your attention to a muscle group. So that's what, when Ben mentions internal versus external, that's kind of what he's talking about. And what this article mentioned is that for the vast majority of people and the vast majority of movements, external cues are significantly more effective to getting the desired movement outcome than internal cues. And most of the reason is because it's easy for someone's brain to draw a correlation or draw attention to something outside of their body. So great example. I have someone new come into class, right? Something we've used all the time is brace your core, right?
What the heck does that mean?
What in the world does that mean?
No, better it. Yet, stabilize your midline.
Yeah, stabilize your midline. I don't know how to stabilize the midline. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know what a midline is. So I can't even find it to stabilize it, right? Versus, I'm going to give this guy a shout out. I doubt he listens to the podcast, but if he does, shout out to Armando Nogueira, one of our class coaches at our Sparta gym. The class was back squatting. Now, to give this guy credit, he's been coaching for about 2 years. I've been coaching, if you include like wrestling, almost, I've been coaching in some capacity for 10 years, significantly longer than this guy. He's coaching the back squat. He looks at the class. He goes, everyone make C's with your hands. So the whole class holds up C's. He goes, take it and put it around your waist, about even with your belly button. He goes, now I want you to breathe into your belly so you feel it expand against your C's. And the whole class breathes in. He goes, that's how you should be bracing your core when you go, before you go to do a back squat. And I was like, holy crap, that is an unbelievable cue. Because you see people who put belts on, but most new people have no idea that putting the belt on isn't what protects your back. It's breathing into the belt that braces your core. And so those external cues are what allow newer athletes, even experienced athletes, to get their body into the positions that it needs to be in to execute a movement correctly. So that's kind of what the internal versus external cue game looks like. And again, there could be good internal cues to use, and there could be athletes where internal cues work better. But that's kind of for the vast majority of people, those will work better versus the others.
Yeah. I'm thinking about like for like a muscle up, like press down with your lats versus like, I want you to smack your head off that wall when you transition, like yeah. That sort of thing. Like you're the same idea, like you're both of them, like you're pressing down with a straight arm and trying to finish the movement using primarily with lat. And it's like the one, like you said, is obviously like inside your body, where the other one's something that you're focusing on the outside.
Yeah. I've used it a lot with like in a class setting with like dumbbell snatches or kettlebell swings. Like I'm sure you guys have seen it. Like people who will perform the movement but really not reach true hip extension, especially in a kettlebell swing where you kind of have more horizontal hip motion. It's like, I'll tell them, hey, see that wall in front of you? Try to get your hip bones to touch that wall, right? That would be an example of an external cue, right? They're not ever going to actually be able to get their hip bones to touch the wall, but I'm yelling.
But they do. I'll be impressed.
Yeah, very impressed. But again, for that person, they've never gotten a hip extension in the movement. So saying squeeze your butt, it's like, am I squeezing this right? Am I doing it right? But if they're trying to get their hips to touch the wall in front of them, that's something they can physically try to do.
Right. And that's where you like want to like really exaggerate it. You're like asking them to like really exaggerate one particular part of the movement or like one particular aspect of the movement so that they actually end up doing it just correctly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what would be a good example? Mm-hmm. Like, I had this girl and she was like learning how to push press for the first time. And she had done push presses with dumbbells and stuff, but nothing where like you need to like tuck your chin and get it out of the way. And I was like, yeah, like growing up, I always had this like middle school teacher and she always had this like double chin. I was like, do you got like anybody that you know that's got like a double chin? And she's like, yeah, Miss Comley, she's got this double chin. And I was like, great. When I say Comley, I want you to make a double chin. And that way that bar goes straight up and not out around your face. So
shout
it's like
Miss Comley with the
shout out Miss Comley. Hopefully she doesn't listen to this.
She's like, son of a gun.
I mean, it was so funny because she was like in tears laughing about it. But then she like never forgot it, right? Like never, all ever. I had to say was Comley, and she's gonna make a double chin no matter where she's at. Like I've said, like, you know, pretend like someone's pulling your ponytail, which would be like more of an external one, right? Where you're like, oh, you're getting your chin pulled back and then it's going straight up, right? The idea being that like something that like someone like intuitively understands what that is. Obviously not going to use that cue for a dude, right? Because they probably don't have, maybe they got a ponytail, they got a man bun.
These but, days, you never know. Yeah.
I mean, so just, you know, having, even if it was something as silly as that and just kind of like stupid, but it's like something where they like, they remember it then and it sticks with them.
Honestly, the stupider could be the better. Right. Yeah. Like that girl will never forget when you say Conley. She's like, oh, I know exactly what that means.
Yeah. It was so ridiculous that you could ever forget it.
Yeah.
Or like, we always had this one guy who would, he'd be coaching and be like teaching like the start position for like a clean. And he's like, I want you to shit on the floor, not the wall. And it was so hilarious. And like, I never forgot that. Oh, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right, let's go through some maybe some of the cues that we commonly use for three different movements. Let's start with a snatch. Cues that you've used a lot that you've found to be effective for a bunch of different athletes.
I know for me, like there's two in particular. One is like pretend you're trying to rip your shirt off with the barbell. So that way they're keeping the barbell close because obviously one of the common faults, the bar is moving away, they hump the bar out. So that kind of gives them that cue to kind of keep that bar close because a lot of times they don't know what it means when it's like, oh, engage your lats, this and that. So that one's been probably one of the most successful ones. And then another one too is kind of like verbal cues. So like if you're standing there watching someone and having like, the speed of your voice dictates the speed of the bar. So if I'm standing there and someone's starting the lift and say, like pull, 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 pull. And then they tend to move fast with the sound of your voice. And so if I'm working with someone one-on-one, I really like to do that because it usually is pretty good if someone's like pulling slowly or not as explosive. So those are the two that I usually go for.
Yeah, it can be difficult to get somebody to progressively accelerate the bar versus just rip it off the floor and then like start to actually lose momentum or just not be in the right position when they get to the hip. So like, yeah, just like getting them to like slow down that first portion or just like focusing on speeding up in the second part is definitely something that's been helpful. I use pull punch a lot because one of the things that I think happens with people is like they start getting lazy with their upper body as they try to use their hips more. Which is obviously like typically the goal. It's like we spend a lot of time trying to get people to use their hips more effectively, especially in something like a snatch. But what ends up happening then is people focus more and more on using their hips. They start to like just get lazy with their upper body. So then it's like, I want them to basically have their elbow pointed up towards the ceiling, knuckles towards the floor. And then again, what I usually say is like pull punch, meaning that like you're trying to get the bar as high as you can and then turn over aggressively where you're, you know, punching your body, pushing your body underneath the bar, and you're meeting that lockout position aggressively. So for me, that's definitely been one that I've said quite a bit.
I personally really like the cue, trying to bend the bar in half. So like with straight arms to get people to engage their lats. If you, I'll take a PVC pipe and it's like, if you engage your lats, you see the PVC start to bend. And so using that cue of like knuckles down and try to bend the bar in half will kind of set their shoulder blades back, get their lats tight. And I find at least through the first stages of the lift, doing that keeps the bar close. You know, once it gets to hip contact, all hell could break loose. But I know at least in the beginning of the pull to the hip, if I can get you to try to bend the bar in half, it's going to stay close.
Yeah. And then for me, one that I'll maybe add to that would be like, I say like, pretend someone's like standing over your shoulder and you're trying to elbow them in the face. Where people like reverse curl the bar and they keep their elbow down versus like I want their elbow up towards the ceiling and their knuckles down towards the floor. But that's like a natural thing that you're going to do if you're thinking about elbowing somebody behind you. And that's like one of those good external cues. All right, let's go to toes to bar.
Toes to bar.
I know like one that I've given for this one is like, pretend you're in this confined space and you're trying to minimize the amount of swing. So it's like you're slapping back and forth. So there are two walls as you're doing your toes to bar. So it's like they kind of have an aggressive kick on the way up and they don't slow down because they're just basically bouncing back and forth between this confined space. Maybe it works well in my head, but.
Yeah, I've seen people do that with like B-kip. where they put like their hands like in the, like that's like a more of a tactile version of like the same thing where it's like they put their hands in like the person's belly or their back and their chest, and they want their chest going back and forth or like their torso going back and forth between their hands. Whereas like a lot of people end up sort of like beginners initiate like a kip from like their feet.
Yeah.
Like they start swinging like a pendulum of a clock versus like moving from their shoulder with like their lats and moving into that hollow and arch from the shoulder. So yeah, I can see that would be, it's like a verbal cue of that basically.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest one, is that exact issue is they initiate the kip from their feet or from their hips. And I feel like that was something, I don't know how you guys, but I always remember when I first got started, people are like, kip, you got to start the kip from the hips. And it was like, I didn't know any better, and I figured it out, but you have people swinging all over the place and it's like, no, this actually comes from the shoulder. And I think for the toes to bar, especially, you got people who don't understand whether it's they're not strong enough or don't understand the concept of pressing down on the bar with your arms. Cause you have to kind of like fold up like a chair and then unfold. And if you don't press down on the bar with your hands, you're going to sway, right?
Yeah. Your hips come forward. And then as they come back down, that's where like your entire body is on one side of the bar. So you get that full body swing.
Yes.
Rather than staying balanced, meaning that like basically like half your center of mass is on one side of the bar, half is on the other. So like your feet are on one side, shoulders are on the other, and then they switch.
Yeah. And so that's definitely what I use a lot is pressing down on the bar. When it comes to toes to bar, a lot of what we do in the sport, toes to bar, bar muscle ups, chest to bar, like a lot of faults come from folks who don't press down on the bar for long enough.
Yeah. And to me, it's either they just aren't aware of how to activate their lats or their lats aren't strong enough.
Yeah, 100%. Especially in that line of action, right? Like you might get people who are used to being in a gym and they've just hit like lat pull downs or whatever. And it's like, okay, my lats are theoretically strong enough. Like I can do a pull up.
Not necessarily straight arm.
Exactly. But I've never done lat action from a straight arm. And so it's like, they're not strong in that line of action to do what I need to do.
Yeah. And going back to the snatch, I mean, that's one of the things that I think probably connects those two is that like people don't know how to activate their lats correctly in the movement. And it's like a bunch of different ways to get them to figure out how to use their lats to help facilitate the right movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you also see it. This is obviously not CrossFit, but like in the bodybuilding space, when people are learning how to do posing and all that, like everyone knows how to flex their bicep, but it takes time for someone to learn how to do like a lat spread or like kind of activate their lats and kind of like flex them. Like it's just not a natural thing most people know how to do.
That's why I couldn't get into
tutorials
it.
Coming out next week with Day.
Yeah, it's like I just can't. I just can't get my spread right.
That's Chris's next.
I see Chris on stage. You're gonna need a lot of tanning oil, Chris.
Oh my gosh, they'd be like, "Who let this? Is that a ghost? A glare?" I would look so weird with all that tanning oil, especially these gigantic teeth. It would literally look like so ridiculous. I'd look like a Halloween costume is what it would look like.
Like a guy standing there in a sheet.
Who let that jack-o'-lantern on stage after I got all the tanning oil on?
All right, handstand walk, last movement here. I'm trying to think.
I mean, for me, the one I use all the time, and this is assuming, right? Well, we're talking handstand walks, so we should assume they're strong enough to be in that position. But a lot of people are so nervous about falling on their face that they don't get their heels going towards the wall in front of them to keep that momentum going, right? Like I've seen so many people, I got no problem kicking up. Like they kick up all the time, and then it's just like, kick up, freeze, fall back down.
Yeah,
up,
it's never freeze, past the tipping down. Point. Yeah.
Exactly, and it's because they're not confident just letting their heels hang towards the wall in front of them.
That's like 8 out of 10 times what I see.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I would joke with people like, they're like, well, what if I fall? And it's like, well, it's really not that far for you to go to fall. Like, how long are your arms? 10 inches? Like, it's all
10
right.
Inches.
You'll be all right.
Yeah, but that's kind of like, some people are just like deathly afraid to fall for handstand walks. And it's like,
yeah,
that's tough because it's also just like, I mean, when I was learning, I fell all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
So if I go to like a handstand hold, one of the things I've used a lot is like pressing into your fingertips and then like trying to like find one like focal point to look at. These are almost more like tips than cues almost at this point.
Well, I thought like grip the floor.
Grip the floor. That'd be a good way to,
push through the shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one that if people are super lazy when they get upside down, it's like, hey, press through the floor. Like really exaggerate your lockout.
One thing that I was told like when I was learning was the way she was describing it to me, she's like, because when I would try to take my first steps, it was like I kept my arms super stiff. And she's like, you don't walk like with stiff legs. You're not walking like you have wooden legs. Like you bend your knees and stuff. She's like, so like when you're pushing through, kind of like learn how to like press through that one arm and also bend the arm that's moving. So you're not walk because you're not going to basically have your arm stiff the whole time.
Yeah.
That helped me a lot, just visualizing like a pirate walking with two wooden legs.
Like, don't be the pirate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my last remarks would just be like, as a coach, like, just find out what works for athletes and stick with that. Like, and until it stops working. If it stops working, you got to find something new. Or if it's not clicking with an athlete, you got to find something new. So it's like, you want to have this like big toolbox of like things that works. But like, if you got like that one thing and it works like 80% of the time, break that sucker out first.
I don't think there's anything wrong with having that conversation with a client. Like, I think I've had it. No, I take it back. I know I've had it before. Like, hey, I'm trying to get you to do X. So I'm cueing you by saying this. It's not working. So I'm going to keep trying to find a cue that works for you, all while letting the athlete know, like, this type of movement is the end goal, so that they know, like, that's what you're looking to do. I'm not just yelling words at you and you're just like, you just keep saying things. I don't know what this is supposed to be, right? Like, letting the athlete in on the conversation, like, this is what we're trying to accomplish, I think is super powerful.
Yeah. And I tend to be like the coach who errs on the side of like giving less cues. If I have an experienced athlete and they're just doing the thing, they don't need as many cues. Like they've got the cues that they're thinking about already, or if they got like one focal point that they're thinking about. And then it's more like conversations outside of that, that are like surrounding like the feedback of the actual technique. Like, you know, I'm noticing this is going on. What are you thinking about while you're doing this? And you start asking more questions and it's like, okay, maybe we should think a little bit more this way. Have you tried that before? And they're like, well, actually, I have tried it and it hasn't worked very well. It's like, okay, well, have you thought about it this way? And they're like, actually, no, I haven't thought about it like that. It's like, okay, why don't we try that out of the next, you know, four times you do this movement and see if you like it or not. If you hate it after four sessions, we'll trash it. Yeah. And if not, we'll obviously stick with it. Simple things like that.
Yeah.
Any last remarks, Day?
Yeah, I mean, like, another thing too is with cues, like, you're mentioning sometimes it doesn't work, but sometimes it works later on. Mm. So someone may not respond to something right away, and it could be because there's a million things going on with their movement, right? And you have to find which you have to fix first, or maybe they just don't respond to it yet. And then as the movement progresses, they'll respond to it later. So it's not, you don't have to always throw away a cue forever. It may work later on. So just always have it in your back pocket.
Oh, there it is in the pocket. Yep. There it is
in the pocket.
Well, there you have it, folks. If you want to hire either one of these two lovely people because they're amazing coaches, go to zorfitness.com/coach.
Unless you need a lat spread.
Then go to hire Day, not Chris.
Call Day.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening. See you next time.
Peace.
See ya.
Thanks for listening today. If you're someone who just started listening to the show, I would encourage you to subscribe so you can stay up to date. If you're someone who's been listening for a while, I would encourage you to rate and review the show. And lastly, the best thing that you can do to support our work is also the best thing that you can do for your performance. And that is by hiring one of our coaches. Until next time, stay the course.